persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free.
The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jimmy Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage. You know, our hearts hurt with those suffering in Louisiana. Our prayers are with you. 31 inches of rainfall in 15 hours. 13 dead so far. 7,000 in shelter. 60,000 homes destroyed. Listen to this. 6.9 trillion gallons of water dumped on Louisiana in the last 6 days. Now, that's enough water to fill 10.4 million Olympic-sized pools. And to all my friends in Italy, 250 casualties and counting from that devastating earthquake. Lord help us. So, you know, I go to goodnews.com, right? There's got to be some good news out there. And a sea otter taught to play basketball for his health. Stork flies 5,000 miles each year to be with injured mate. So his mate says, where have you been? Scientists jumpstart a coma patient's brain with ultrasound. That's been known to jumpstart a few liberal brains, the comatose, asleep in their liberal ideology when they see that baby in the womb really is a baby. So I'm having some fun. You know, a few giggles here and there, and I hit this one. Quote, take a 360-degree virtual tour of Yosemite with Obama as your guide? Even so, come, Lord Jesus. Hold on, folks. It's time for another stimulating insight, generating brain, scintillating pulse, raising intellectually satisfying, heart-strengthening brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
The Hillary attacks the Donald, but Donnie slaps back. It's a mud fight, folks. Oh, yeah, Hillary, racist, racist, Donald, bigot, bigot, big fat liar. Well, I added the big fat liar part, okay? It's sort of a verbal caricature of the Donald's rhetorical style. I mean, you got to admit that. And you know how it is. You look at a drawing of someone by a good caricature artist, and they have a knack for bringing out a feature by exaggerating it, right? Only in this case. Anyway, Hillary's Reno speech was a gamble at best, and apparently it's not paying off for her. Perhaps she was counting on the MSM echo chamber repeating the attack until it looked like she had Trump in the corner of the ring, pummeling him while he stood there cowering and cringing. But the problem is, if they do that, they'll have to include Trump's responses, right? And instead of cowering in the corner, he's slipping her jabs and launching blows of his own that are stunning her. For example, Ben Boychuk of the Sacramento Bee writes, quote, in December, Clinton took a swipe at Trump's penchant for sexism around the same time she announced that her husband, former President Bill Clinton, would be campaigning for her in New Hampshire. Trump slapped back hard, quote, if Hillary thinks she can unleash her husband with his terrible record of women abuse while playing the women's card on me, she's wrong, end quote. That's a Trump tweet. Clinton had no answer for that one, and she won't have an answer for it when it comes time to debate. He concludes, Trump will crush Clinton in the debates. Well, I guess we'll see. Who was that guy that wrote the article? And his argument, I think, was brilliant. That Trump will win because, like it or not, we are a TV culture, and Trump is better TV than Hillary. he's way more entertaining. And the argument is that current polls are way off. You know, Hillary leading by 12 points, really. But some major players in the polling industry have decided to focus on a group they call most likely to vote. The theory is there is a large sleeper voting bloc that some describe as the undercover voter. And the idea is that polls have never been able to accurately account for the undercover voter. Something called the Bradley effect. People lying to the pollster. It's a phenomenon that it's involved. It plays some part in every election, of course. So the idea is there are a whole lot of people out there who are claiming they're not going to vote for Trump, but intend to. And the theory is that in this election, this group is large enough to make a difference and might even be enough to overcome the 5 to 10 points a voter fraud advantage that the Dems have rigged into the system. Oh, boy. Oh, and then there's this, by the way. Supporting the idea that there is a large wave of undercover populist nationalistic and secretly mad at Obama and hate and fear Hillary more than Trump voters out there in that sea of humanity called America to build a wave that's going to overwhelm the vote in November and give it to Trump. And that's why these online voting polls supposedly are coming in so much more favorably for Trump. But there's one problem. The hard data don't support the claim that Trump does better in online polls. I got it right here from Democratic Convention through July, analyzing these online polls. However, lately, as in today, here's one online poll that does show Trump ahead, but barely, by less than a point. Now, look, I've made it clear I have zero respect for Hillary and consider her a total disaster as president. I mean, friend, her idea of political hardball makes Watergate look like a kindergarten version of political wiffle ball. And I've made it clear I don't trust Trump, already whiffling on his immigration stance. By the way, the wiffle illusion. You ever hit a wiffle ball? Hard to know which way that thing's going to fly. But I've also said that if it's down between Hillary and Trump, I would hope Trump wins. So this is not about me trying to crow over my warnings that Trump was the worst possible candidate to send up against Hillary. Mostly, if you remember, because no other GOP candidate running back then so totally canceled all of her negatives. And none of them could possibly make her look sort of presidential. Although Trump does. But I don't need to add any more fuel to that fire. I get it. Many of you are mad at me enough already. I'm as distressed by this as you likely are. The whole point of this show is the truth. And I challenge what the right feeds me, and I look at it as closely as what the left feeds me. Because there are a pack of liars in both sides of this whole thing. Anyway, deceiving and being deceived. What I fear is that the unseen wave that's going to decide this election won't be undercover Trump voters, but undercover illegal voters or voter fraud. And I think voter fraud gives the Dems about a 5 to 10 point advantage going in. A 1 point lead in the polls will likely result in a 5 to 6 point loss in the election. I really think that fraud is going to play heavily in this one. Now, my hope is that God will hear my prayer and regard my fast and bring the truth up out of the streets where most Americans have thrown it. That voters will see the real Hillary and the real Trump, for that matter, that election fraud will fail, and that enough of the remnant will wake up and turn to God so that there actually will be a difference made in this whole mess. I'm telling you, folks, it's more about what you do with 2 Chronicles 7:14 than it is about what you do in the voting booth this year. It's more about what his people do in the prayer closet than it is in the voting booth. But Trump is a fighter, and he is certainly better TV than Hillary. So the theory that Trump can beat Hillary survives as plausible, even if it in part depends on some flawed assumptions. Hillary was betting she could bluff Donald into a defensive posture with her Reno speech, but it backfired. And I think it simply gave the Donald the chance to go at her in kind. I mean, if she attacks the Donald in this way, it only gives him an excuse to fight back in the way he's most comfortable and in the fighting style he's most comfortable with. And, by the way, most likely to win. So anyway, let's run through the Reno Gamble speech, shall we? First, the idea that Trump's divisive language is, quote, like nothing we've heard before from a nominee for president of the United States, end quote. Really? What about her speech at the League of Latin American Citizens? You know, the one you can't find anywhere because it's been scrubbed? Where she basically said Republicans are racist and if Latinos know what's best for them, they'll vote Hillary. Hey, how about this one, the old yarn? Republicans want people to starve. Remember that one? That wasn't a presidential candidate? Yeah. Well, Obama's got a record for divisive rhetoric, my friends. God and gun clingers, anyone? If they bring a knife, we bring a gun, yeah? I don't want those people doing a lot of talking. I just want them to get out of the way so we can fix it. America's no longer a Christian nation, implying that up until that dramatic announcement, Christians ran the show. But now it's different. Christians have been neutralized. They're on the margins, you see? All of this inappropriate comments about race and about the police, all very divisive. And this, here's my favorite. Trump is mainstreaming radical hate groups. Oh, God. Quote, helping a radical fringe take over one of America's two major political parties, end quote. You have got to be kidding me. This from the lady who participated in hijacking the Democratic Party for her socialist agenda. And talk about mainstreaming a radical hate group? I mean, there is no more hateful group than the gay rights activist crowd, representing, what, 3% of the population, a culturally marginalized subculture pushed off into the shadows of virtually every culture throughout virtually all of history, except in some rare exceptions where it didn't go well for, like, Sodom, okay, because of their aberrant and unnatural behavior. I mean, you know, dope addicts, for example, are not encouraged to live openly in society. They're not highly sought after as examples of proper society. And people who do the sorts of things homosexuals do are off in the wilds of immorality and deviancy, engaging in dangerously unhealthy behavior that's reducing their lifespan on average to about half the general population. I mean, talk about mainstreaming a radical hate group, what, that attacks those who oppose their lifestyle and insists everybody go along, you know, that threatens, berates it. Well, you just don't know the half of it. I've got an audio recording of a gay rights activist group circling a church in San Fran, yelling, pounding on the doors of the church, threatening the people, blocking entry, homosexuals threatening, and some of them purposely attempting to spread AIDS into the mainstream of society in order to normalize the disease and thereby end the stigma attached to it. But you don't hear about any of this because it's, well, you know, it's like that 22-year-old Afghani asylum seeker who raped a 4-year-old boy in a bathroom stall in a migrant camp in Germany. Or the recent scandal here where teachers were told that they must allow transgendered boys to sleep with biological girls on field trips. And here's the real kicker. The teachers were told, don't tell the parents about it. Also, the idea that people are born that way is a hoax. There's no scientific support for this. The fact is, women have two of the same type of sex chromosomes, XX, and men have two distinct sex chromosomes, XY, and it's still XX and XY. And so at the fundamental biological level, men and women are, well, men and women. There's no XXY or YYX or anything. It reminds me of a study I picked up recently, a special report on sexuality and gender published in the New Atlantis Journal, prepared by Mayer, who's a PhD, and McHugh, who's an MD, that totally debunks the whole fantasy world created by the left and Hillary et al. Regarding gender identity. There's no scientific evidence supporting the idea that anyone is a man trapped in a female body or vice versa. But these things aren't newsworthy, because they're not stories that advance the agenda of the left-biased propaganda organs dedicated to transforming America into a godless, socialist, antichrist country, joining the raging heathen, shaking their fist at God and his Christ, saying, we will not have that man to reign over us. We're not going to be governed by your rules or your laws. But what is news? Well, Hillary and Trump are in a mud fight. That's the news, right? Wow. Hey, did you hear the one about Hillary's connection to the terrorist, Mahmoud? It goes something like this, you know. The wife of ousted President Mohamed Morsi not only admitted in an interview with Turkey's Anatolia news agency that she sought to excite domestic insurrections to overthrow Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, but that she collaborated with Hillary Clinton, quote unquote. You know, Morsi, yeah, no? Oh, well, he's that Muslim Brotherhood buddy of Obama's that took over Egypt as the, quote, first democratically elected president, end quote, in Egypt's history, and then immediately proceeded to become another pharaoh, yeah, quote, as President Morsi issued a temporary constitutional declaration in late November that in effect granted him unlimited powers and the power to legislate without judicial oversight or review of his acts. The temporary constitutional declaration was called for a referendum, an act that his opponents called an Islamist coup. Goes on to explain that it was these issues with other complaints, like prosecuting journalists and attacking nonviolent demonstrators, that brought millions of protesters into the street in 2012. You remember all that. So email leaks proving the Clinton Foundation was a fee-collecting service for those who wanted to buy political favors from Clinton while serving as Secretary of State, you know, and her connections with a terrorist member of the Muslim Sisterhood. Well, that's just peripheral incidental, you know. Nothing to see over there. And what's really interesting is that Hillary called Trump a racist. And he shot back. Well, you're a bigot. All right. Hold on through the break. I'll be right back.
The science of a brain massage. The brain masseur uses words like fingers to massage your gray matter, forming insights in the mind that stimulate the pituitary to signal the adrenal to release noneparephrine neurotransmitters and to fire these neurons through the sympathetic nervous system affecting the heart. The skilled brain masseur uses incisive logic to arrest our attention and nuanced razor-sharp rhetoric to cut away the tangled knots in our brains. When these knots are removed, the electrical impulse of stimulating insights fire the neurotransmitters so they can leap the synapse gaps. This generates a sparkling effect in the brain that can cause the countenance of a brain massage listener to glow. Additionally, sudden outbursts of energy caused by the release of glucose throughout the body increases the heart rate, while the pituitary gland in the brain releases all five types of dopamine at once. And this creates that sense of euphoria experienced by many brain massage listeners. And that's the science of a brain massage.
Satan is called the dragon and prince of the power of the air. The devil beware. Pastor Scheibach is on the air, swinging the sword of truth at the dragons of deceit, thrusting the blade of incisive insight into the belly of liberal lies, lies that blind man's mind in darkness. He wants to know if you have his back. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457.
Encounter God. The word encounter means to meet, to experience, to come face to face, to confront. Many encounters are routine happenstances, but even these can have a major impact on our lives. I'm sure each of you listening to this can think of encounters that made a difference in your life. But the greatest life-changing encounter in any life will be those encounters with God that make a difference. Perhaps you've encountered God in the past, but it's been a while since you experienced God in a vital, meaningful encounter. Renew your experience of God with a fresh encounter this year that will impact your life for spiritual growth. Perhaps you've never experienced God, and He doesn't seem real to you. You can encounter God, and when you do, your life will take on new meaning and purpose, and you'll know that God is real.
The devil beware. Pastor Scheibach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheibach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter. Lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. I wanted to go through Hillary Reno's speech, her big gamble, but I ran out of time, and I won't have time to do it in this segment. But there is one more comment I really wanted to address. Regarding Trump, she quoted Maya Angelou, famous author and civil rights activist, who once said, quote, "When someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time," end quote. I really hope Hillary supporters were listening. Hillary has certainly shown us who she is. But what are your Trumps is going to do with stuff like, you know, quote, "When Trump was getting his start in business, he was sued by the Justice Department for refusing to rent apartments to Black and Latino tenants. Their applications would be marked with a C for colored, and then rejected. 3 years later, the Justice Department took Trump back to court because he hadn't changed," end quote. Now, your answer is going to have to be that he consistently denied those allegations, that he countersued, although his countersuit was thrown out as having no merit, and basically he argued that the government was persecuting him because he refused to rent to those depending on welfare for their incomes. So, you see what I mean? Trump has got an uphill climb all the way, so all you Trumps are going to get back and just push. So I'm talking about what matters, right? I mean, Obama pays $400 million to Iran in what is obviously a ransom deal to free American prisoners held hostage in Iran. And recently, we discover he has sent an additional $1.3 billion to Iran. Now, this money was sent to Iran ostensibly to, quote, "settle a failed arms deal from 1979," end quote. What? Oh, yeah. According to Obama and those explaining all this, America owes Iran, or owed Iran, $1.7 billion that Iran had paid to America for arms they never received because of the uprising that took place in 79. So, the first question I have is, who in America received the $1.7 billion? I mean, it's not like these other socialist dictatorships where, did the U.S. Treasury actually get this money, or did one of our private arms manufacturers get it anyway? According to the State Department, the $400 million was a down payment, a show of good faith that the $1.3 billion that was owed would be forthcoming. It was timed, incidentally, to look more like a show of good faith to secure the release of the four American prisoners. Now, according to this article from the Washington Examiner, the State Department confirmed the payment was made, but could not tell us to whom it was made. I mean, we know it went to Iran, but we don't know who in the Iranian government actually received the money. They couldn't even tell us how it was paid, cash, check, or money transfer. When asked, the State Department said it could not guarantee the money would not end up in the hands of terrorists. Well, how about whether it will end up funding Iran's nuclear program so they can get a bomb they can use to blow Israel off the map? All right. So Obama's negotiating with Iran for the release of these four American prisoners, right? And they are Washington Post reporter Jason Rezaim, former U.S. Marine Amir Hakmati, Christian pastor Saeed Abedini, and then there's this before unknown prisoner sent over here with these others, Najratollah Khosravi Rudsari. All these guys, I'm Muslim, except for that pastor. We know about him, and I'm glad all these guys are released. But now, Najratollah certainly has an interesting story, but that's for another time. He is a U.S. citizen. He was an FBI advisor. He was arrested as a spy and so on. At the same time, Iran is talking to America about a very old 1979, quote, claim at the U.S.-Iran Claims Tribunal at The Hague, end quote. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Iran had paid something like $1.3 billion for arms, but the delivery was interrupted by the Khomeini Revolution, the so-called Iranian Revolution. So the new government claimed they had a right to either the arms or the money, and we disagreed with them since we did not recognize the new government as legitimate or something along those lines. So Obama, wink, wink, perhaps we can do something about this claim over here at The Hague, you know, and maybe you can do something about these four prisoners. So $400 million arrive on an airplane in Iran, and coincidentally, the four prisoners are released. And then, following that, an additional $1.3 billion is sent. So did Obama find a way to help Iran fund their nuclear program? Did he deliver over $1 billion of our tax dollars, by the way, to Iran in what is likely to become a fast and furious debacle, you know, where we end up arming the Mexican cartel with guns they use to kill American citizens, only this time we're going to arm Iran with nukes they'll use to blackmail Israel or America, or both, or worse. And how insane is it to give Iran this money, perhaps use it to support refugee camps or something, but to hand it to the present Iranian government is something akin to having someone break into your house and then you politely hand him your gun and the combination to your safe, by the way. Obama's plan only encourages Iran and other rogue terrorist-sponsoring states to seek out more American hostages to imprison. Remember, Iran crowed that the payment of $400 million, was for deals made for hostages. Oh no, look at this. Quote, since the cash was airlifted, Iran's Revolutionary Guard has arrested two more Iranian-Americans. Tehran has also detained dual nationalists from France, Canada, and the UK in recent months. Unbelievable. And then this, Iran harassing our Navy ships, you know, that supposedly inadvertently crossed into their waters. How many more times is that going to happen? So while Iran is posturing as an aggressive antagonist against America and American citizens, Obama contrives to feed the beast a cool $1.7 billion and give them bragging rights for defeating the great Satan, stoking their, Perhaps Obama took a card from the Reagan playbook on this one. Remember Iran-Contra? You know, that whole thing began as an arms trade deal with Iran for the release of seven American hostages? You libs that support Obama and hate Reagan, you owe Reagan an apology. And you say, well, you owe Obama an apology. No, I don't. You see, I didn't support Reagan's arms for hostage deal back then. I think that sort of deal-making encourages these kinds of situations. We need to demand Iran release the hostages or face the stealth bombers, yeah? Now, before you go all torqued out on me, I know that's an oversimplification of a complicated issue. I mean, it's a caricature, okay? It exaggerates a feature of what I think our policy should be on these situations, but it's a feature that says effectively this, we're no longer playing games with the lives of Americans. You mess with one of ours, you invite the full power of the American military to pay you a visit. We need to shake up this present establishment mentality among the nations and how we deal with this nonsense. Maybe Trump's the man to do it. And on that point, I have been accused of being inconsistent. A polite way of calling me a hypocrite. I know. I have declared that I will not vote for Trump, but I have said, nevertheless, I sure hope he wins and not Hillary. Some of my dearest supporters of the Rain Massage Show have thought I'm being inconsistent. And then I get this letter from one of my friends, an article by a pastor, a Dr. Grudem, I assume he's Wayne Grudem, I think. Anyway, he explains in this letter titled, or this article titled, Why Voting for Donald Trump is a Morally Good Choice, that according to the Bible, we ought to vote for Trump. His claim is that he used the Bible to prove voting Trump is the Christian thing to do. So I went to the original article, the full text of it, And I just don't have time to address it fully, but I will address it in an Issachar report coming up soon. His arguments run along these lines. First, nothing wrong with voting for a flawed candidate. Right. I agree. So long as God is using men, he'll be using flawed instruments to affect his purposes. Next point, because that was never my reason for not voting for Trump. And so next, seek the good of the nation. Well, okay, I do. But I read in a Bible verse once that, you know, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. So that kind of comes first. I'm with Pence on that one, you know. God, country, and family. He quotes Jeremiah 29:7 that tells us we're supposed to seek the welfare of the country where we are. And so he says we should seek the welfare of the United States. And I agree. Of course I do. And that's the reason I can't vote for either Trump or Hillary. In other words, and I have to move on to the essence of this brother's argument, after listing all of the issues that certainly are of concern to every God-fearing patriot and arguing, I think truly, that Trump would be better than Hillary in each of these cases, something, by the way, that I have said repeatedly, he finally comes down to the actual point and the underlying principle of his argument, this business of choosing between two evils. Essentially, at the core of his argument, it comes down to an issue of unbelief. But yeah, he believes he must choose the lesser of two evils. Jesus prayed we be kept and delivered from the evil. And his reasoning is because all God has provided to him, in his mind, is a choice between evils. That's all he's got. I mean, that's a very old rationalism that Christians and non-Christians alike have used to justify doing something that's clearly contrary to what God's word says. I had no choice. I only had this between two evils. That's pretty old stuff. In the Bible, God complained against Israel and Judah, not because they failed to make the best choice between two evils in appointing rulers. He complained because they did not make their choices according to his word. They have set up kings, but not by me, he said. The reason I can't vote Trump is that Trump does not qualify according to biblical criteria, which does not require anything like perfection or flawlessness and so on. And I've mentioned David, but it does very specifically point out the exact characteristics that we should avoid when appointing rulers. And friend, both Hillary and Trump are disqualified according to that criteria. So I'm voting with an eye on the Lord and acting in accord with his word. Mr. Grudem is a Christian pragmatist. He departs from the word and leans on his own understanding when it comes to something like this, and I don't. By faith, I believe that so long as Christians continue this rationalistic approach and fall into the trap of choosing between two evils, they will continue to have only evils to choose from. In their way of thinking, I'm stepping out by faith, and I don't believe God has given me only evils to choose. I can choose something good. And I'm going to vote according to the word and not the world. I'm not controlled by the world view of things, but rather word's view of things. If God gives us either Hillary or Trump, I regard either a token of divine disfavor. And it is not hypocrisy for me to say I'm not going to participate in an action that sets me contrary to God's word. And I hope that he will choose, that is, that God will choose, since he's the one ultimately who will, that he will choose the lesser of these two evils to fall upon us, the lesser of the two judgments that are set before us, you know, as per Amos and so on. So the hypocrisy is on the other side. Anyway, I must go to production for this show. I won't make it in time. I'm really pushing my limits today. I'll be preaching at Faithway Baptist Church in Elk Grove, California this weekend. So if you happen to live in that area, come on by to meet me. We have a wonderful guest preaching here at Lighthouse this weekend, Pastor Max Graves. You'll love him, and you'll be blessed. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you call and let me know you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000. Leave a message for me in our listener response hotline. If you prefer, go to our website, brainmassage.net. It's not thebrainmassageshow.com. You can still use that if you want. But the website is now brainmassage.net. If you're in a hurry, when you call, just say lights on, lights off, hang up. Or leave me a message. I'd love to hear from you. Or better yet, go to our website. Take a look at our new website and send me a letter. I'd love to hear from you. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.